Managing Violence Podcast, Season 5, Episode 6, with Dr. Gav Schneider. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Managing Violence Podcast. I'm joined today by Dr. Gav Schneider. Gav has been on the podcast before and told his story. I highly recommend you go out and check out that episode as I think it gives a lot of context to what we're talking about in this episode. But we ended up going down a bit of a rabbit hole in this episode. We started out with just a general brief of let's talk about this concept of presilience and personal presilience. And what we ended up doing was really creating a bit of a manifesto of hope for martial artists, martial arts instructors, and the warriors of society, whether it be our police, our military, our first responders, our security personnel, and how we look at ourselves, how we label ourselves, and how the skills and attributes that make you really good in one of those fields can also articulate over into other fields. So with so many in our community that are currently displaced in terms of not having their normal income or not having their normal means of to provide for themselves available, this is a really valuable conversation. And given everything that's going on in the world right now, I found this to be very motivational and very comforting in a lot of ways. So without further ado, please welcome Dr. Gav Schneider. I'm joined by Dr. Gav Schneider. Gav, great to have you back on the show. Your first interview was very well reviewed. Sorry, I'll get my words out eventually. Very well reviewed, and
you want to start that again?
No, I'm good. Let's just roll with it. We're both exhausted. We've been chatting off air about how exhausted we are today, so we're just going to roll with it.
Joe, thanks for having me back, buddy. Much appreciated.
Yeah. So Gav, there's a few follow up questions that came about from the first episode with you. And if you haven't listened to the first episode, make sure you do. You get a good insight into Gav's background and the place of experience from which he speaks. But one of the most interesting things about your story, I think, is that you've reached a high level in a variety of different fields that are all somehow connected to that warrior ethos. Firstly, as a martial artist, then as a bodyguard, then as a trainer, and now in the corporate world as well, and let alone academically. But I'd be interested to get your thoughts on the synchronicities or how those elements overlap and how that foundation in martial arts, which started everything, has benefited you in those other areas.
Thanks, Joe. Really interesting question. And I think this lends to the concept of one of the challenges I think that many of us face, and probably many of your listeners face, is that the majority of society that we live in today is probably not a warrior-centric society. And, you know, we find a kindred spirit when we talk to other warriors, but then find a huge gulf between people with the warrior mindset, whether you're a martial artist, police officer, bodyguard, military, or other agency. It doesn't really matter. There just seems to be this really big gulf between the sheepdogs and everyone else. And, you know, one of the things that as my career has moved on that I've come to accept is while it's frustrating, it's more the responsibility of the warrior to meet the sheepdog, not the sheepdog to meet the warrior. And we keep getting that part wrong. We keep trying to expect the sheep to raise themselves to the level of warrior. And that's not the default setting of the world we live in. You know, while, you know, there's no doubt, as we often talk about, the world is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, you know, we're not in an age where, you know, gross violence is actually the norm. It's still comparatively the exception when we look at interactions compared to other eras. So, you know, I think if you were a samurai, you know, the marriage of warrior skill sets and other attributes, you know, calligraphy, poetry, etc., was well accepted. Mm. In the modern era, these two things have drifted apart in a way that they really shouldn't. And I think one of the important things we need to keep reminding ourselves as warriors is that, you know, it's not just about success on the mat, success in the ring, or if you have a warrior vocation, it's not just success in your job, it's about success in life. And, you know, you could be the world's best full contact champion and, you know, have a broken family relationship, not be successful financially. What's the point?
Yeah, in fact, I'd say that's probably the majority of very high performers that I know in that world are incomplete, I guess, as human beings, in that the level of selfishness that it takes to excel to a high level in sport is not usually conducive to a good home life. And that's just a trade-off, I guess.
And that's the other piece around, you know, I guess as I'm getting older, I'm realizing my body can't do what it used to. And part of the challenge is actually accepting the fact that I'm not going to be able to train for 6 hours full contact like I did when I was in my 20s or early 30s. But on the flip side, you know, there's so many more aspects to my career and the things that make me now unique that are so much greater. And the thing I'd be urging anybody listening to this is, just because you have a separate job or vocation, or you do things that are not maybe warrior-centric in your mind, doesn't mean the way you approach them shouldn't be warrior-centric. And that's the challenge. There was a really good book, and I wish I could remember, it's called Living the Martial Way. I think it was Forrest E. Morgan who wrote it.
It is, yeah. Forrest E. Morgan, I've got that one on my shelf as well.
Great book around balancing those two attributes. But that should be, and I know one of the questions you wanted to ask was, what should martial artists read? But the challenge we've got is that it's hard to marry the warrior vocations together with living in a society that probably puts an unrealistic value on unachievable things, such as peaceful interaction between humans and harmony and those sort of things, which, you know, while aspirational, I don't think anybody would object to living in a world without violence where everybody got along, but it's aspirational. So while we're in the segue between really two worlds, you know, the world of violence and the real world that most warriors and sheepdogs have experienced, the fundamental challenge is you have to have a whole other aspect to your personality, to your skill set, and to what you do to actually be rounded and successful. And, you know, as me and you discussed a few times, I'm starting to have, it's interesting, lots of conversations with, I guess, my ilk, which are probably people at this point, you know, in their 40s and 50s, who are getting to the point where their bodies are hurting, and it's really hard to define yourself by your martial prowess. And if you get to that point and you haven't rounded your life, it's really hard to maintain a positive mental image of who you are, what you do.
I think that's a real challenge to people's identity when your whole identity is being wrapped up in your physicality, and then inevitably the physicality fades. Is, well, what's left?
100%. And you know, this we speak about it in a lot of different ways. You know, it's the fighter vocation, if you want to call it that segue, is a short-lived vocation. It's hard to take that further than your, let's say, late 30s. And part of the challenge then is, what is the transition? You know, do I run a gym? Am I a teacher? You know, what do you do? I think it's easier for sheepdogs that, you know, might be in law enforcement or in the military to continue that evolution. But for people who aren't in that vocation, who have maybe grown up doing martial arts, run a martial arts school and have another job on the side, or work in security, for example, the age and the physicality part becomes a real challenge. And I think one of the things that I've been able to do quite well, I'm not alone, there are many others, is transition the same drive that I had physically into my mental, academic, and business career. And I don't view those as separate. They're the same attributes that make a successful martial artist will make you successful at business, or make you successful in whatever your chosen pursuit is, if you can transcend the limitation of the physicality of it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to unpack a little bit. In our first conversation, for those of you that may not have listened to it yet, I highly recommend you go back and listen to these in order, because it'll make a lot more sense. But you talk about growing up as a martial artist, loving martial arts, traveling to Israel, coming back to South Africa, you know, obviously surrounded by violence, There's a traumatic event that happens in your life. I won't go into that story, but you end up working as a bodyguard. Now, I'm sort of envisioning you in your early 20s. You're still basically seeing yourself as a martial artist who gets paid to protect other people at the same time. I mean, it hasn't really been a great transition at this point. It's still kind of very martial. And then at some point, you undergo further study. You end up in Australia, and I know, I can't remember if we talked about this in the podcast. I don't think we did, but the first business you bought here in Australia was a safety business, not a security business. That must have been a transition for you.
Well, it was interesting, John. You talk about the transition pathways. I've always loved business, and probably my first real transition was the transition from viewing myself as a martial, as a fighter, probably, okay, and bodyguard, to a businessman. And that was probably the very first transition. And the duality of the two was a consistent challenge, probably for the first 3 to 5 years of running a business. And my business partner at the time, Mac McGuire, who's a fifth Dan, highly accomplished martial artist in his own right, he was ex-military, and he had also this, a similar challenge where we love teaching, we love training, we love shooting, we love fighting, we love operating. And about 3 years into our business, we went, we've actually got a business, which now required us to stop being as martial and frontline centric as we were, and to actually pull back and run the business. And, that was probably the first evolution for me when I realized that, realistically, it was great. And, I'm not a very big guy. And, the beginning part of my career, as we spoke about on the first one, I fought often and had to build a reputation, but it meant nothing in the business world. Mm. Nobody cared how hard I could punch, kick, choke. In fact, if anything, it was an impediment.
Yeah, it's a detriment.
Because the more you reference back to that, the less people think you're approachable.
Yeah.
South Africa was easier because of the violence and the crime. There was a strong understanding or respect for that. So it was an easier transition there. The shift into Australia was much, much harder. I was very lucky that by realizing the limitations of the physical centric approach only, and adopting the academic study pathway comparatively early, I'd already realized that the one path is not the only path, and that you have to marry these things together. And having a scholarship to start my PhD in Australia gave me time to research the market here and understand it better, while I was still traveling back and forth to South Africa and India and all sorts of other places. And when we bought the safety business, it actually wasn't a hard shift at that point, because I'd already transitioned to my mindset of being a businessman first and a martial artist second then. And it's interesting. I was actually having this conversation with my wife the other day, and we met each other in about 2006 or seven. And at that point, she made the comment that I was still defined by my martial arts and my bodyguarding.
Yeah.
And it was probably only around 2011 or 12, so after being in Australia for a few years, looking at buying that safety business and kind of moving forward, that I kind of really shifted and went, hold on a second, there's numerous intertwined pathways. And the Australian culture, as you would know, is a challenging culture from a warrior perspective, because the level of crime and violence compared to many other places is very, very low here. And even our sheepdogs very rarely have to actually use actual physical skills compared to many other places. So in that shift, once you kind of make the acceptance that, hold on a second, most of the time what martial artists love and what makes a high-performing martial artist great is the ability to push through pain, set a benchmark or a goal that you didn't think was achievable, and meet it. And those two variables transcend. So, academically, I still remember with my PhD, there were so many times where the last thing I wanted to do was read another research study, sit behind the laptop and type stuff out. And it's a transition of what do we deem to be toughness and pushing ourselves. I kind of relate the example of what do we think toughness is. And, I guess from a martial arts perspective, in the beginning of my career, when I started sparring and fighting in the full contact taekwondo stuff, I thought that was tough. And then I got to Israel and looked at what they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's nothing. You know, what they're doing in Israel is tough. Then I got back to South Africa and started doing the bodyguard stuff and went, hold on a second, going, you know, almost 3 days with no sleep and still performing. That's tough. Then we started training special forces soldiers. And you know, there's guys who are going 3-4 days with no sleep and no food and still performing. Like, that's tough. But with the academic hat on, I still remember complaining to my academic supervisor, who Professor Anthony Munnar is what I would probably call an academic superman, saying to him, you know, man, this is really tough. And he had a little giggle and looked at me and went, you know, when I did my PhD, I had to type it on an old typewriter. And, you know, a mistake cost you hours. So you know, I think there's different levels of toughness depending on how we challenge ourselves. And I have to say, in all fairness, the hardest mental challenges I've ever had have been business challenges, by far the hardest. You know, when in martial arts, you have a clear opponent or a clear objective. We went through a stage with one of our businesses when the mining downturn kicked in Australia. We were losing lots of money every week. I'd sold all my assets and I was pumping all my personal money into the business with no support and no light forward on that. And kind of the only thing that kept me going through that, because it would have been really easy to give up then, was the discipline and fortitude that I'd built through martial arts, which was you can weather toughness if you're mentally strong enough and committed to push through. And I mean, you work in R2S now, you've seen the outcome of being able to weather through that toughness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably, that's a message that there's a lot of people in our martial arts community that need to hear that right now. There's a lot of martial artists around the globe that I'm connected with that are really hurting right now. Their businesses have been closed down. They don't know when they're going to be allowed to reopen, or if they are going to reopen, it's going to be in a significantly modified format. They don't know if their students are going to come back. They've been forced to adapt to an online or a subpar online delivery system. Some are doing better than others at that. Some are rejecting it outright. It's a really, really rough time to be making your living out of martial arts. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you just said about take what made you a great martial artist and apply that to your business.
And the two are, they're not separate aspects. Like, I know for a fact now that if I still didn't train and still didn't teach, I would not be able to perform in my business life the way I do. I need the escapism of the martial arts, the sharing of knowledge from the martial arts, the physicality and the expression to stay sane with the pressures of, you know, running businesses and dealing with complex clients on multiple time zones. So, you know, one of the pieces, and I think you just hit something really important. Like, we grow out of adversity. That's the nature of a warrior. Like, warriors, you know, while there's that debate of, you know, warrior is born or warrior is made, we know it's a bit of both. But the warriors who stick it out, the ones who are always there, are usually the ones that weren't born with the gift. They're the ones who persevered and kept going and kept going and kept going. The ones with the gift, when it gets too hard and the gift starts to fade, are the ones who normally drop out of the game, which is why you don't generally see a lot of these people teaching into their 50s, 60s, and 70s, because they've kind of had their time, their bodies are broken, and they can't define themselves anymore. Having role models like Dennis Hanover is amazing because he's 83 and he's still on the mat. But with this COVID era, I was quite haunted by a message I received from a colleague there. You know, in 60 years, this is the first time no classes ran at his gym.
Yeah, wow.
And you start looking at that and you kind of go, all right, so, you know, there are different levels of hardship, and it's not just financial, it's mental as well. Mm-hmm. But I would be urging everybody, and this is, you know, I've been through it, I've switched now to the online training. We did the best we could with online training. We're slowly switching back to outdoor face-to-face training with zero contact, with social distancing and all the other pieces in play. You know, we should be taking the warrior mindset to that, not the frustrated mindset. And, you know, those who rejected online training outright, I would urge them to be rethinking and going, one of the things that makes a warrior successful is adaptability. And, you know, it's about winning. Why do we define winning as? Well, in this case, it's not stopping. So, you know, I really try to push that through all my students and everybody else through this period. So, yes, online training is not ideal. Yes, we are highly limited. Yes, skills transfer is limited. Yes, you cannot actually keep somebody to fight virtually. But on the flip side, can we develop warrior attributes in enhanced skills and keep people going? Absolutely. So, you know, I think that that's one of the pieces that I would urge, if you are running a martial arts school and you were disrupted through this period, don't let it break you. Let the cycle change. You need to adapt with what's in front of you now and make yourself stronger out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, I completely get the frustration, especially for some of, I know some of my network where they're in particular areas where other businesses have been allowed to open, but their dojos still haven't, and they don't see any reason why that should be the case. And I know there's talk of legal action in some cases where people are trying to sue their governments for that. It's that I feel like, you know, like I completely get the frustration about it, but I do wonder if that's the best use of energies. I mean, that you're inviting so much more negativity and stress into your life, whereas if you just try to make the best of the situation as it currently stands, you might be in a better position to act upon it rather than, you know, dropping $100,000 in legal costs to try and fight your government over it.
Well, let me give you an analogy that almost all martial arts will relate to, right? So prior to the UFC and MMA becoming so popular, you know, everybody was a one-trick pony, right? My system is better than your system, striking is better than wrestling, etc. And we've seen with MMA evolving that, well, it's the rounded fighters that come out on top. We've also seen a more open and realistic approach to combatives, where there is an acceptance that you can't actually defend yourself unless you factor things like weapons and multiple attackers and live training and contact and all these things into that. So if you look at that evolutionary process, it's about playing the game that's in front of you to win. And like I respect some of the martial arts school owners that you're talking about who are suing their governments. That's the fighter instinct. But one of the things that I guess getting older and playing in different games, you got to pick the fights you can win. And, you know, what is actually the desired state? The desired state is to get back to, you know, the ability to teach and train and grow and do whatever you were able to do free. That will come. Like, that's one of the big mistakes, and we've spoken about it in other forums, that people have made with COVID by thinking that we will not get back to where we were. You know, we've had lots of pandemics in history, and, you know, we will get back to where we were, but let's try and get back stronger, right? So, you know, I would be urging those people who are taking that fight, this is your chance for personal growth. You know, read books, do degrees, do courses. It's never been easier. So many educational institutions have been giving stuff away for free during COVID. So the chance to build a multifaceted capability has never been easier than it is right now. And part of the challenge comes back to what we're talking about before. If you're only defining yourself by your prowess in one environment, how well have you actually mastered life? And as we said before, in a society, and I'm talking globally, that is probably not overly warrior-centric. And even in places like Israel, which, you know, might be one of the most warrior-centric societies in the world today, you know, the majority of the population are not thinking of war and they're not thinking of survival. They're trying to make a living and innovate and grow, you know, live a happy life. So part of the challenge, is about facing what's in front of us, accepting the fact that, you know, prior to MMA, I thought my kung fu style or your karate style was better, and we couldn't really prove it because our techniques were too deadly to fight each other. We've kind of moved past that now. This is the era of the multifaceted warrior. So stop, you know, I urge you, everyone who's listening, stop trying to only be one thing. Like guys like Gershon Ben-Keren, what a great example. You know, qualified, doing a second master's degree, you know, writing books, giving so much back at a different level. There's a lot of people out there. You know, Rodney King differentiated himself doing a PhD. There's a lot of guys, David Rubens, a highly graded Aikido guy. There's a lot of martial artists that have done this and do it. If you're not going to join that structure and then you're upset and you're frustrated because you've been disrupted by COVID, that's actually on you for not adapting, not the government.
Yeah. One of the things that I find really interesting, when I first was introduced to your concept of pre-zilience, which anyone who listens to this show knows that I've talked about presilience before, and we have another podcast, the Presilience Podcast, as well. But one of the things that made a lot of sense to me when you first explained the idea of presilience was, from a self-defense point of view, we've always, anyone who's responsible has always taught that the best way to win a fight is to be situationally aware and not be in the fight. All right. It's about what happens beforehand. It's about building those attributes, the ability to read body language, to read behavioral patterns, to know where crime happens and who crime happens to, so that I'm not that person or not in that spot. I think that makes all the sense in the world. But when you start applying that to other risks, that's presilience in a way, is it not? So if you just want to talk through, I mean, for those that haven't heard the episodes about presilience on the Presilience Podcast, let's just get a snapshot of what presilience is and how it evolved, and then we'll talk about how that might apply to this audience in terms of managing violence.
Well, let's just talk about that for a second, because the concept of presilience is so closely married to a warrior mindset, you can't separate the two. You know, warriors throughout time would train hard so they could fight easy. Now, that's the nature of resilience, right? But it's also about building the rounded skill sets that will enable us to cope in a wide range of scenarios. And if we are too one-dimensional in our approach, we're actually not able to cope and function. So the challenge we've got now is, it's not about relating resilience back to martial arts, because they're the same thing. It's not about relating resilience back to a warrior vocation. They're the same thing. Because everybody knows, if I want to be a good marksman, and I want to be able to shoot under pressure, I have to put thousands and thousands of rounds downrange. Okay? If I want to be able to survive in a real fight, I need to actually stress test myself, scenario test myself, build that skill set. So why wouldn't you do that with the other aspects of your life? And this is the interesting piece, that I believe the sheepdogs, you know, your listeners, are the ones that are best placed to help us transition many parts of society that don't want to change to a more resilient approach. Yeah, because resilience is not just about, you know, let's be proactive in what we're doing. Yeah, it's about trying to embody the skills we need to win at life. Yeah, and when we actually look at that sequence, we have to play the variables that are in front of us. You know, life pre-COVID is a little bit different to life in COVID, which will be a little bit different to life post-COVID, which, again, in a year's time, who knows what it'll be. So, you know, we're kind of cheating ourselves if we only build, let's talk martial attributes for a second. So almost every traditional warrior vocation has an honor code. Okay, whether it's samurai, whether it's even an old school boxing gym, you know, where you'll listen to the ref and you'll obey the rules, and there's an honor code. And we build great attributes, and the list could go on, but let's just talk about the mental, not the physical ones. Right, we build commitment, we build the ability to persevere, you build self-discipline. Yeah. Particularly those of you who cross train and do lots of things, you build agility into your mindset. Yeah. You know, if you look at an MMA fighter now compared to what they used to be, they can all box, they can all wrestle. You look at Krav Maga and combatives trainers, at least the real ones that are actually getting out there, you know, they pick up any weapon and they can fight with it. You know, they're standing, they can fight, they're on the ground, they can fight. So the attributes are actually transferable. It's perceived mental limitations that stop that transferability. So it's not the actual ability to transfer self-discipline. You're either self-disciplined or you're not. Okay, it's the mental ability to go, can I apply that self-discipline the same way I did on the mat to do that extra punch or the extra number of push-ups or the extra this or the extra that and push through my perceived breaking point? Can I apply that to my academic career? Can I apply that to my business career? So linking that back to resilience is an approach and a way of life. So if we explain it a bit further, you know, the concept of resilience is something very strong for martial artists. Martial artists know, I need to hang in there. I need to weather the toughness so I can get a grade or move up to the next level or just achieve the competency I want to achieve. But it works the same way in life. Persistence is a critical skill, particularly when things are not easy. And, you know, I say this to every martial arts student in every defensive tactics class I've ever run. Nobody cares how you do when you're feeling good and things are going the way you want them. Everybody can do well when I'm rested, my eye is in, I'm well trained, and I know the scenario in front of me. right? But that's not the world we live in. So resilience is about taking the core skills we need to be able to cope effectively and developing them. So we've identified a few core skills that we think are really important with resilience. Surprise, surprise for our martial arts and managing violence cohort. You know, the first one is situational awareness and vigilance. Because if I can't look around and know what's going on around me, how am I actually going to be able to respond proactively? Yeah, but it goes bigger than that, right? Because situational awareness is not just about the situation. It's about all the knowledge I need to be able to spot the right opportunity or threat. And this is something else martial arts teaches us. It's not just about the threat. Like anybody who's sparred or wrestled knows how to create an opportunity. You know how to push here so you can pull there. You know how to feint high so you can kick low. That's life. But you've got to be able to apply that across that domain. The next key piece in that situation in the resilience mindset is the idea of critical thinking. And this is an inevitable problem. And let's talk martial arts for a second. But it happens in all warrior vocations. You know, police versus military, this unit versus that unit, firefighters versus police. Like, all, there's a lot of competitiveness. So one of the challenges for us is to actually go, well, it's not really about who's better than who. And, you know, that's how individuals sharpen themselves. Great. But what can you do from your own perspective that will enable you to more effectively succeed at the game of life, not just succeed in the one vocation you've chosen? And that's where this idea of critical thinking is really important. If I can't critically analyze my own strengths and weaknesses versus what's happening around me and make an effective judgment call, how successful am I going to be at anything? Then moving on from critical thinking, the next idea is enhanced decision making, which, you know, for those in the corporate world is pretty much just risk management, right? So if I can't make good decisions after critical thinking, because critical thinking is a component of decision making, right? If I can't make the right call and act on it, then I could be the best academic, or I could be the best armchair martial artist, but none of those skills are workable for me. I need to be able to decide and act, and I need to be able to do that appropriately for what the best likely output is going to be. And then the last one is the ability to have effective and directive communication, which if you are a teacher and you run a martial arts school, or you're a law enforcement official, or any of those sort of vocations where skills are really important, you're developing those. I mean, you know, Joe, in your own transition, how important it's been to transition from physical to verbal and postural and nail the mental pieces behind de-escalation. And, you know, even in your own career, you've seen the growth cycle go away from, you know, oh, throw a punch at me so I can defend and take you down, to hold on a second, let me talk you right out of that, so we're mates and you're happy. And that's the win. But can't we relate that same win back to your success in life? And let's be realistic about it. That's while there are quite a few people that have made good money out of martial arts, I would say that certainly is the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, there's I definitely think they're the they're the pronounced minority. Those that have even made their living out of martial arts, I think, are probably the pronounced minority of those who have tried, let alone those that have made serious money.
So it creates an interesting paradigm discussion, because, you know, I don't want to get too technical into this. And for those who are interested, looking at there's a YouTube video where I explain, I think you even recorded it, Joe, where I explain the difference between simple, complicated, complex, and chaotic states of operation. But the mindset of I'm just going to be a warrior and that's all I'm going to do and that's all I'm going to focus on for my martial arts school or for my police career or my time in the army, that time has actually shifted now. That we're in the fourth industrial revolution, the world has changed. Okay? We're moving away from focused specialization to more generalist skills. Okay? So this is also where you should... And I'd urge the readers to look up and spend a bit of time thinking about liminal thinking. And in summary, it really is, if you think you can, you probably can. If you think you can't, you also can't. So, you know, the limits we put on ourselves are often the limits that we enact in life. So if you're able to go, hold on a sec, I can be a great martial artist. I can be a great teacher. I can have a career on the side, or I could study and I can do other things. and be fulfilled and achieve, then you're more highly likely to succeed at life. And it is one of those challenges. And I think we've all walked that path. I've had my time, you've had your time, and I'm sure every listener has, where we've gone, all I want to do is be the best fighter I can be, or the best bodyguard, or the best soldier. But the problem is with that, those are short-term tenures. And it is possible to actually marry the two together. So I know for a fact that my academic work has made me better at martial arts. It's just like martial arts made me better at my academic work. I know that the martial arts skills I developed have made me better as a businessman. It's just like my business skills have made me better at de-escalation and reading people. So one of the things that we need to do is, and we often talk about this, right, Joe, silo bust. You know, try not to put yourself in the silo where you're going, this is my swim lane and this is all I do. And I would urge your listeners to ask the question, says who? Who says that all you can do is, if you want to run a successful martial arts school, is just teach martial arts? Or if you want a great career, just be a cop, or just do this or just do that? That's outdated thinking. And, you know, we have seen, we are in an era where you can have multiple careers in your life, but I would say it's also the other side. You can have multiple simultaneous careers. And don't get me wrong, if you want to be at the top of your game, something has to give. And I've seen this through my life too. You can't run a business and be a great fighter and a martial artist and have a family at the top of the food chain. But the question I'd be asking back to your listeners is, isn't it good enough just to be among the best instead of trying to actually be the best? You can still be among the best and then achieve in multiple spheres. And, you know, there's plenty of do it. Not, I've been able to do it, but many others have done it too. You know, I was listening to your podcast with Tony Blauer the other day. And, you know, while the academic side of, from a qualification point of view, hasn't developed for him, there's no doubt he's a well-researched, really smart guy who's married the two things together. So, you know, there's lots of role models and examples to do it. You know, the challenge is back to your listeners and back to our warrior population and to our sheepdogs to be warriors on the mat, off the mat, in life, and adopt the strategies that will enable them to be successful sheepdogs and role models, not be limited by, hold on a second, you know, if I really want to be good, that's all I have to do.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Everything you've just said is so important, and I think it's a message for all of us at the moment, because if the last couple of months have taught us anything, is that we can still be surprised. No one in January thought that April was going to look the way it did, and that was after COVID was a thing. I mean, COVID cases had already been announced. People were, if you're paying attention, you're loosely aware that it was a thing that was happening. No one saw it panning out the way it did in April, or at least, yeah, no one that I've spoken to. I'm sure there's some very smart people out there that have edited their Facebook posts to make it look like they did. But anyway, so with that in mind, I mean, we can't be stuck in one way of doing things. If your only skill set was teaching martial arts and that was taken away from you literally overnight, you need to find something else. You need to do something else and use those attributes. And you're talking about the things that made you a great martial artist made you better at business as well. And it reminded me of something that I heard Joe Rogan say many years ago about high-level wrestlers and why they were so able to acquire great striking skills. And I think there was a conversation taking place that someone said it's because of the fast twitch muscle fibers that great wrestlers have, that they can strike with power. And that's part of it. But Rogan's point of view was, if you can excel at wrestling, you can excel at anything, because it's incredibly hard. It's incredibly difficult. It takes an amazing amount of willpower and discipline to become a good wrestler, because it's an elite level sport where you grind with no reward and no teammates. So there's no financial incentive. There's nothing except pride, and there's no one to push you except yourself. So I think if you can take that back to martial artists, if you can succeed and become a highly skilled martial artist where there's very little financial incentive for doing so, it's all about you pushing yourself. Most of the time, you're not being pushed by your sensei or being pushed by your training partners. You're pushing because you want something better. If you can take those attributes and apply them to learning a new skill, learning a new trade, mastering Zoom teaching, whatever it might be, or like Matt State, who was on the podcast previously, Matt is a great martial artist. He's just released a book on online teaching of martial arts, but he took what he knew about martial arts and turned into a TikTok expert, a social media marketing expert, right? Literally overnight, because he obsessed about it. He learned everything there was to know about it. And now he's created a completely viable income stream for himself and a completely unrelated discipline because of the attributes he already had.
What a great success story there, Joe.
And I think there's so many of, this episode really should be an encouragement for everyone out there who's feeling a little bit disillusioned. You probably already have the next great thing inside you. You just have to think a little bit more laterally about how you can apply what you have.
So let's just talk about that for a second also, because what you said is very important, very powerful. But part of the challenge is when you're used to defining yourself by your belt or the respect you get from your students or the rank you have on your sleeve, when those things are taken away from you, the ability to define yourself is often what holds you back. And having restarted over a few times in my life and entered things that I had no idea about and started from the beginning, I think one of the biggest challenges we have to get over is our own mental limitation. And the more I jump between different vocations and different specialities, the more convinced I am that the critical skills for success are very much the same. We just get caught up in this construct of speciality and jargon, where, hold on a second, you know, if I have to talk about high performance or leadership or management or business or any of these other things, because they all come with their own separate languages, it's daunting and overwhelming. When you actually can translate the language, get involved, you find that most of the core concepts are quite similar. And you found that in your own evolution, right, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the challenge that I'd be pushing back to, you know, anybody in a warrior vocation that's feeling frustrated is think about what defines success for you. Because very, very few sheepdogs, warriors, martial artists, fighters are ever going to be the best. And you might even be the best only for a snapshot in time. And it was very good advice that I was given when I started getting into my competitive martial arts career that, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are, somebody will beat you at some point and they're going to be better than you. And that part, yeah, it hurts to lose. It definitely hurts to lose. But I can, with a clear conscience, say without question, the ones that I've lost are the ones I've learned the most from. Sure, it hurts. But and I'll give you one example. In 2001 or 2, you know, Rodney King, who I know you interviewed, brought MMA competition to South Africa, and we had the first Pride event. And I recently won a championship in Israel, and I reckon that's awesome. I'm going to do that. I need a challenge. And in training for that, I broke ribs. In fact, they've to this day have healed wrong and don't work quite well. But I'd had the belief that, you know, no matter how injured my body was, if my mind was strong enough, I could push through and be successful. And surprise, surprise, I did the fight and I lost. And it shattered my world because it crumbled the belief that my mental strength could overcome my physical limitations. And in hindsight, when I actually look back, it cost me more in physiotherapy and x-rays than I actually got paid to fight, significantly more.
Yeah.
The amount of effort and energy I put into the fight could have been better spent on my business at the time. Okay. But I needed to learn that lesson, because had I actually won that fight, it would have reinforced the wrong message for me.
Yeah, true.
And you know, it took me many years to kind of get over that. And it was for a while, I was kind of going, oh, at some point in my career, I'm going to get back in the ring and, you know, right that wrong. And as I kind of started growing the other aspects in my career, family, business, academic, it sort of just lost its importance. And it was kind of like, awesome, you know, jumped in there, lost. Great. So what? I've actually learned now that nobody's superhuman. We all hit breaking points physically, mentally, and emotionally. We can't push past our limits continuously and expect to keep going. And that's been a life skill for me. And it's one of those things, and I just use that as the example, that, you know, the lessons you learn on the mat are so transferable. There's that other great book, Joe Hyams, Zen in the Martial Arts.
Yep.
Where, you know, the parables and the stories he talks about are how, you know, lessons he learned on the mat translate to life lessons. But that's what we should be doing. Like I look at some of my martial arts students, some of them are barristers, some are medical students, and some are gardeners. Doesn't matter. You know, I really try and encourage, and the way I've tried to run my school is I'm trying to create a place for the people who want to grow multiple vocations. It's not for everybody. If you decide your vocation is going to be fighter, wonderful. Just understand that you have a short lifespan there. And even while you're doing it, you should be looking at other things. I'd urge you guys to check out, there's a guy in South Africa. He was a student of mine many years ago, became an MMA champion and set up a series of gyms in South Africa, Brendan Katz. Brendan's becoming a businessman. He's probably doing really well. And one of the challenges we've got to do is not be limited by our own perception of what success might look like. And it's also about being realistic. Not everybody can be super wealthy. Not everybody can be the world's best fighter. Not everybody can be a leading academic. But being among the top of that food chain, isn't that a great achievement? And, you know, I think one of the things that we should be pushing our warrior fraternity focus on is trying to be the exemplars in life holistically, not just the person that, you know, kids you beat up on the mat look up to and think you're good because you can beat them up. You know, we've all been through that. We've all had teachers like that in our career, but that time has come and gone. So, you know, I'd be urging everyone who has this warrior mindset, this is a great pause for you to be rethinking what success in life means. Not just from the selfish perspective of anybody who challenges me, I can beat them on the mat. Because we've all learned that lesson, right? And you just have to Google it to see how many MMA fighters go down in street fights or, you know, get taken down in real violence to realize that, you know, you could be the best at one thing in a different context, doesn't work. So what's the point of being the best teacher with the biggest martial arts school if you can't even wear the COVID? So, you know, and I don't mean that as a slight. I mean that as an opportunity. That for people who have been severely disrupted, this is a good shake up, wake up to modify and adapt your skill set, to be resilient, not just on the mat, but in life. And, you know, one of the best rewards that a teacher can have is the success of their students. And if you're still in the mindset that you're challenged by your students and you don't want them to be better than you, and any teacher in martial arts has been through that. I remember many, many times in my career going, I have to train hard. I have to be better. Hold on. My students are getting good. This is a problem. Like, you know, this guy might even beat me, you know, and then trying to figure out ways to hustle and, you know, not teaching every technique so that I could still have some up my sleeve. Yeah, that's a very outdated mindset. And, you know, if you get stuck in that cycle, it's hard to break out of it.
Just as we start to wrap up, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the new personal risk management course that we've launched with R2S Academy. I know it's something that you've been in some form of development for a couple of years in terms of taking different shapes, different concepts. Just introduce for our listeners what the personal risk management course is and some of the journey in developing that and what you hope it will achieve for people.
Cool. And thanks for the opportunity to talk about it. As I know a lot of your listeners have had exposure to some of the online academy stuff over time, COVID is a good opportunity to capitalize on all of this. One of the challenges that, well, let's call it a 15-year career so far in academia has shown me is the problem with academics is that they are so smart that they can't explain their smartness to people in a way that they get it. And we complicate this continuously because we need to prove the validity of a model of a thought process. And if you think it's bad in martial arts, I urge any of you to look at academia. It's brutal, right? And you know, if you think martial arts is competitive, yeah, look at academics fighting for research grants.
Yeah, if you think politics and martial arts is over the top, you haven't talked to any professors.
100%. So one of the things we try to do with the personal risk course, and we found this with the resilience journey, is that if you aren't able to make good decisions for yourself and your family, why would you do it for your business? Why would you do it for the people you work for? And the concepts we've tried to distill in the personal risk course are the key skills you need to be able to make better decisions. And now the challenge with this is no online course will make you fit and ready to make better decisions. Just as no university degree is going to make you better at making real life decisions. What they can do though is give you the tools you need to practice and the thought processes you need to develop so that you can build the skills you need to be resilient and make better decisions. So we've tried to distill that in the online personal risk management course. You know, if any of your listeners are listening, I would say there's a sequence to this stuff. And the sequence should be do the GSAT, the General Safety and Security Awareness. Or if you've already read my book or some of the similar ones, you've probably got that content nailed. Make sure, again, if you've read those books and you understand adrenal response, great. But if you don't, then do the stressful situation response program. Once you've got those two under your belt, the personal risk course is the next step. It's about getting your mental game right so that you are more effectively positioned to win at life holistically.
Yeah, I think that's really good value. And at the moment, I mean, I know that the Australian dollar isn't doing fantastic. So if you're in the US, the courses are actually pretty cheap right now. Take advantage of our misfortune by capitalizing on your slightly stronger dollar.
Well, on that, Joe, I know we haven't discussed it, but I'd be more than happy for, let's say, your first five listeners who send you some love. You can arrange a free pass for them.
Oh, there you go. You know what? I'm going to say that the first five people that comment free course on this Facebook post that announces this particular episode, which is Managing Violence on Facebook, I will send you a free coupon code for personal risk management. How about that? That's a good impromptu promotion. We didn't discuss that at all. So I hope I remember by the time I edit this and upload it.
Well, just linking back to that, Joe, and I probably, and this is maybe the parting note, the best martial artists that I've ever seen and the best warriors I've ever seen are the ones that have purpose. They truly believe it doesn't really matter what art you train, doesn't matter what service you serve in. It's the ones that believe in what they do that are the best performers. And part of what drives my businesses, and it drives you too, you feel it and you see it every day, is we want to be making a difference. And one of the last pieces I urge you to think about, and martial arts is a really tough one. Martial arts and money are a hard thing to mix. Okay. But if you value yourself and you value your knowledge and you value your skills, and it's taken you a long time to earn those skills, why should people pay you for that? And it's a fair trade, right? You know, if you go to a doctor, you don't expect the doctor to do stuff for free for you just because they're there to help people. So, you know, martial artists, it's the same thing, guys. Value your skill sets much more. And from our side, I believe it's a life skill. It should actually be a human right for everybody to be able to protect themselves and not live with fear. And this goes further than just self-defense, right? It goes further than violence prevention. It goes to the point of being able to live a healthy, successful, and fulfilled life. Because what's the point that you live with no fear, but you're financially in ruin and you have weak family relationships? So, you know, this idea of integrating the thought process of warriorship with resilience to achieve holistically, this is where we should be going. And I would love to see, and I'm, you know, very humbled often when I look at the feedback and support you've been able to get through this podcast as an example, where, you know, the trolls and the haters haven't been allowed, and there's a bit of a brotherhood that's grown.
Absolutely. I get very little hate, which is surprising given the number of downloads. I get very, very little abuse.
So let's transition that to helping all of us be more successful at the whole game of life, not just understanding how to manage violence better. And that outcome is resilience. If we've got it, we'll certainly be more successful, all of us.
Absolutely. Very well said. If you're interested in checking out those courses, make sure you head over to www.r2s.academy. I'll put the link in the show notes. The company generally, www.risk2solution.com. Thank you, Dr. Gav Schneider. Gav's going to stick around and do the bonus questions for Patreon contributors. If you are a Patreon contributor, make sure you check those out. If not, Thank you very much, Dr. Gav Schneider. It's been a pleasure having you back.
Thanks, Joe, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you once again to Dr. Gav Schneider. And as I said at the start, it really turned into a bit of a message of hope for those of us that are a little bit displaced at the moment. And I know this is a little bit more of a niche topic, a bit of a niche audience for this particular show. It won't resonate with everybody, but I really hope that those that needed to hear it have heard it and have got something out of it. I wish you nothing but the best. For those of you that are holding the line at the moment, those of you, especially my friends in the United States that are living through a bit of turmoil at the moment, our heart is with you. If we can support you in any way, please let us know. God bless, and I'll talk to you again soon.